I can get an apple for the exact cost of what it is at a store, but it's fresher. You know, it's actually hard, like it's supposed to be, and that sort of thing. That's why I'm like, oh, actually, the farmer's market is much more attainable than we realize.
Yes.
You have both.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the drawbacks too, of transporting our food so far and before consumption is that you have to pick it earlier. Right? So it's not ripe, it's not flavorful, it hasn't had that opportunity to like really come into its nutritional prime, right? And then two, you know, because it's been so long since it's been picked, oftentimes it's already started to decay. The nutritional value has already started to decline. And then it's like you're eating this thing, but it doesn't have all of that like yummy nutritiousness in it. That's the whole reason that you're eating it. Hello, and welcome to the New Humans for New Earth podcast. I'm Queenie, your host. And on this podcast, we believe that every human alive today has a role to play in helping to co-create a new, more loving, and more aligned world. Here, we'll introduce you to wisdom, perspectives, and information to support and inspire you in making more aligned choices in your life. We're here to co-create New Earth. So let's talk about it. In today's episode, I want to talk with you about food, and in particular, an option for sourcing locally grown food that you may have overlooked, your local farmers market. Like so many aspects of life in our country today, the vast majority of our food industry is controlled and operated by mega corporations. Just a handful of corporations control the majority market share of 80% of regularly purchased grocery store items. But this control doesn't just stop at the items that you see on the grocery store shelves, because these companies are vertically integrated, which means that they control every link in the food chain, starting from seeds and fertilizer, all the way up to slaughterhouses and supermarkets. This consolidated control means that these corporations have the power to dictate what crops farmers grow, what they're paid for those crops, as well as what we pay at the grocery store. And according to one recent estimate, only 15 cents of every dollar that we spend on groceries actually goes to the farmers growing our food. And just as we've seen with powerful folks in the tech industry spending tens and hundreds of millions of dollars to buy favor and backroom deals, the food industry plays this game as well. During the 2020 election cycle, the food industry spent $175 billion on campaign contributions and lobbying efforts. The consolidation of control over our food supply is reflected in where we buy our groceries as well. Today, just four companies control 65% of the retail grocery market. And these same companies are the main beneficiaries of government aid. In 2020, 82% of all food stamp benefit dollars were spent at stores like Walmart, Kroger's, Sam's Club, and Costco, adding $64 billion to their revenue, thanks to your tax dollars. So how do we opt out of supporting the further consolidation of control over our food supply in the hands of mega corporations? And how instead can we opt in to supporting the farmers who actually grow our food? Here to speak with me about this topic today is one of my oldest and dearest friends. She's a member of the board of the Port Orchard Farmers Market, as well as a co-owner of Sierra Serenity, a wellness brand specializing in loose leaf teas, smokeless smudges, salves, and essential oil blends. Please give a warm New Humans welcome to Shireen Dedman.
Hey, it's right. I'm doing clapping not for me, but for you. It's you to celebrate. Thank you for having me. I am excited to be here, but the podcast is number two. You mentioned food. I'm here for food.
Yes, you are.
As you know. Food is always the reason I come to Portland.
Well, we are like such a good foodie town, and I have a passion for food myself. So it's a good overlap.
It's a great city. It's a great reason to be down here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know like if you've had any of the research about how food everywhere is starting to taste the same. U.S. foods, everyone's getting their food, like restaurants are getting their food sourced from the same place.
Yes.
So really, you go to one restaurant, you're kind of going to the mall.
Yes.
And somehow Seattle and Portland don't have that problem, whereas Portland, it's because it tastes delicious. Seattle just tastes terrible.
Oh.
I'm like, please source from the same place as everyone else.
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean, that's just another facet of the control of our food supply. Yeah.
And so, you know, on behalf of farmers markets everywhere, it is a great place to go. If you want to take control of your own food and the taste of it, because, you know, honestly, most of the time I sit in a restaurant and I'm just sitting there like, I probably could make this myself. Mm-hmm. And probably make it better, or at least better to me, right?
Right.
Who am I to say what other people like? But for me, I could probably make it better. Although I still haven't figured out fried rice.
Yeah. Those dishes for me where you have to cook it twice.
Yeah.
I trip me up every time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like planning for the meal, well, you know, that far in advance. Yeah. I don't know. So.
Yeah. So tell us. Tell us a bit about your work on the board of the Port Orchards.
Sure. My sister and I, we joined the board at the end of our first season as vendors at the farmers market. I'm a big part of it. Like, we're big on volunteering and contributing to a community. And we really felt that at that point, the community had done so much for us as vendors. And it was just, you know, if you love farmers markets, why not give back in this way? They were seeking board members. So we figured, why not? So that was the end of 2024. And so I've been on it since. I'm actually on the executive committee as well. Yeah. And so it's a fair amount of commitment and work and energy, but it is still something that is valuable to the community. So on the days where I feel like I'm too tired to do this, I just have to remind myself, like, there's a reason I do this. There's something worth it. So, you know, gets me to go to my computer and start doing emails, things like that.
Yeah, totally. I know those days you're like, I think I've got 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So one thing that I was shocked to learn recently is that fresh produce under our industrialized agricultural system travels something like 1,500 miles from where it's picked to where it ends up being consumed. And for those of you who just don't know at home, like, that's like this, that's more than the distance between Portland, Oregon and Boulder, Colorado. and apparently the transportation costs under this system account for something like 14% of all energy used by the agricultural system, which is, in the grand scheme of things, not the biggest portion, but it's still quite a bit, right? So, you know, I'm wondering, like, who are the vendors who are vending at the Port Orchards Farmers Market? Like, are they traveling 1,500 miles to, like, get there to sell their veggies or what?
Well, we actually do have some who do travel a bit from Eastern Washington.
Okay.
And so a lot of the fruit we get will come from there. So nectarines, I'm just trying to think of, you know, a lot of the citrus, because citrus does not grow well on this side of the mountain range, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to find an avocado at the farmer's market here because no one can locally grow it. For the most part, a lot of the local farmers are either directly from Port Orchard or just, you know, adjacent. So Kitsap County or the neighboring counties of Mason County, Pierce County, I'm trying to think, maybe Jefferson County as well. And so oftentimes they are your friends, your neighbors. Port Orchard's fairly rural, so it is going to be a place where you can't have enough space for people to know people who have farms.
Right.
but it does, you know, your food's not traveling very far. There sometimes will be some traveling from, like, let's say, my sister has a friend, he is a farmer up in Squim, but the food goes to Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's a fair distance, but it's still, you know, you're not growing very much in the city of Seattle.
Yeah. So, not yet.
Yeah. Not yet. but I guess, yeah, I have had lovely carrots from Seattle. So there are some community gardens out that way.
Right. Yeah. No. And I mean, what I've heard is that, like, urban farming is more and more of a thing. I think Detroit is actually really pioneering this.
Yeah. If you ever want to talk about farmers and especially Black and Brown people and the underrepresentation, but a larger now representation in the urban farming, my sister is a great person to speak to about that.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to have that conversation with her at some point. Yeah. So tell us some more about who these people are who are vending at the Port Orchard Farmers Market. I mean, you know, you mentioned they're your friends and neighbors. I mean, are they individual farmers who are just working for themselves? Are they larger operators? Like, who are these people?
Yeah, so the ones that, you know, when I mentioned the ones from Eastern Washington, those are going to be your larger farms, but they're still just, you know, they're just Yakima's farmer, or, you know, neighbors, where, you know, it's a community built on agriculture, but, you know, normal people, and they're definitely not breaking in the money the way Monsanto does, right?
Well, now Bayer, right? Yeah.
But, you know, I think one of the board members is one of the farmers, so engaging with her, she actually has a full-time job, and she said, she's like, really, this company is supposed to be my kids, like, teaching them how to run business. They're the ones who want to, you know, make money by selling things. And so a lot of flowers, so cut flower farming, and then a lot of stone fruits.
Okay.
So strawberries, but we don't have very many berry vendors. And when they do, it's like they sell out very quickly.
Yeah.
There's another one where it's a lot of the lettuces and a lot of squash, and apples.
Apples.
Yeah. So they have an orchard out on their property, and it's young children with what I believe is their grandmother. I've never asked specifically. but you know, you go up, that kid looks like he's maybe 10 years old, and he's the one helping you, and he's the one turning in his funds and his form and everything else.
Wow. Yeah, good for him.
Exactly.
I love that.
You know, so yeah, there's like the farmer that has a lot of herbal starts, right? Because someone like me who's never going to start from seed. And if I try, I would starve to death. So starts are a great way to feel like a farmer, you know, kale, things like that. You know, there's also some of the farmers where they are bringing, you know, so they sell yarn and they sell soap. And the yarn's coming from the sheep that they actually raise.
Wow.
And, you know, they're spinning it, you know, cleaning and processing and spinning it themselves.
Yes.
And the soap is coming from their sheep's milk. You know,
very
so
cool.
Very, you know, very local, but many aspects to what a farm can provide at your farmer's market.
I love that because, you know, anymore, if you try to go and buy yarn at a store, it's all plastic. It's all acrylic. You know, I mean, you can go to the specialty stores and obviously that's the way to go if you're going to do that. But I love spun from goat's wool. Is it wool?
Yeah, it's wool. Yeah, yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I never heard of that.
So I am a knitter. And I do. I remember even just when we first started, it was a group of women. It was the middle of winter. We lived in the mountains, nothing else to do. And we went from taking a class with each other to then just meeting each other to learn, you know, continue the knitting. And I remember I pulled out some acrylic yarn and I was like, I'm making a baby's blanket and I needed something that was like washable. And it was just the other woman next to me. She's like, I think it's so funny that we have to justify using acrylic, even though we just started. And frankly, you know, like that kind of yarn, at the time it was like, it's a good way to learn without using a very, very expensive yarn to learn. But in hindsight, a great way is to go to the Goodwill and find yarn that way.
Yes.
So that you can practice without spending a lot of money on great yarn that you'll definitely make mistakes on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there are tons of people who have tried to learn how to knit and they move on.
Exactly. You know, and I wasn't somebody, so even from a non-environmental standpoint, I had to move into natural fibers because of hormones. Right? Like I cannot tolerate being hot because I have Graves' disease. So nothing makes you hotter than fabric that won't breathe. So that's when I started paying more attention to what was in, whether it's my clothing or the yarn that I work with. And wool is one of the, you know, obvious ones. I personally really like cotton as well. Although there's things that, but anyway, so yeah, you say knitting. I'm like, yes, I have opinions about that. And it is really cool when you can buy the yarn directly from a farmer.
Totally. I mean, it's rare that you run across a person anymore who like knows how to make yarn. I love that you know someone.
Depends the circles, actually.
Yeah.
I know plenty. But that's because I hang out in knitting circles.
Yes.
I'm actually going to be taking a drop spindle class this coming week
so that
I can learn how to make my own yarn from the like you get this like thing of fiber and then you actually spin it into yarn.
Yeah. I used to, my mom would do that and I would watch her for hours doing that. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So how many people on average do you think are attending the Port Orchard Farmers Market? Like, and do you have any sense of like what that is versus the population or sort of just, I mean, maybe that's too much, but.
So we do, because we do counts. And so average throughout the entire season would probably be about 1,500 per market. But really it kind of, it goes anywhere from about like 1,000, 1,100 up to 2,200, depending on the day.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is always a really big one. 4th of July weekend, because people have family visiting and they just want to get out and it's usually beautiful weather. So that in comparison to the city of Port Orchard itself, that which is a population of about 18,000.
Okay.
And Kitsap County is not much larger, but we also have multiple farmers markets going on Saturdays. So,
yeah.
And even in the grand scheme of the county, we do have other places people could go. But yeah, it's a decent amount. When you are vending there, you could definitely feel the difference between 1,000 people versus 2,200 people. But it is a great way. It's on Saturdays and it's by the water, and so there is a transit hub, and we do hope people are, you know, taking the buses there, especially anybody who can't afford a car or can't drive anymore, they don't have a license, things like that. These are the considerations that we make whenever we think of location for a market. You know, we're currently considering a second market during the week because not everybody has a Monday through Friday 8 to 5 schedule.
That's right.
You know, so trying to address those people, hoping to get, you know, in a location. The things that we consider are, you know, public transit. Can people get there by walking or if they can take a bus there? We think about the income level of the area we're in. You know, if we're next to apartments, then we are going to get a great deal more people who may be using food assistance, you know, food stamps, EBT, WIC, things like that. We also think about, is there a senior home nearby? Because, you know, there's certain allocations. You had mentioned, you know, there's allocations for seniors specifically to use dollars at the farmer's market.
Oh.
But often they don't know about it at all.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah. And there, you know, the same to be said for anybody on food assistance. You know, often markets will have a market and a SNAP match. So anybody on EBT can get a certain amount matched at that market itself. You know, for us, it is $25, but because of the cuts by the current administration, it's going to be less for every market out there. Seattle, and I say this to people, I'm like, I love my market and I always encourage people to go. But if you are someone who is on food assistance and obviously money is an issue, I recommend going to Seattle because the soda tax that they implemented, actually they use 4 matching dollars, the SNAP match in at the Seattle farmers markets.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it is dollar for dollar.
Oh.
And your dollar can go a lot further at their farmers markets there.
Okay.
They have great markets. I'm going to say Ballard is my favorite. they're all great, but Ballard's my favorite. you know, and what you, with EBT, you can use it for prepared food.
Mm-hmm.
With WIC, you can use it for produce. You know, one of the things that we hope here in Port Orchard is to find a dairy, you know, somebody selling cheese, somebody selling milk. We don't have that.
Mm.
But, you know, if, in a place like Ballard where they do have that, your money can go towards that.
Right.
Yeah. So I really think that people, and that's the thing about a farmer's market, is that we're always trying to figure out how to get that information out to the public, because
mm-hmm.
not everybody necessarily knows that, right?
Yeah.
But we really think it's important that people, even if you are, for lack of a better term, poor, and I say that as somebody who grew up poor and still mm-hmm. feels, identifies as poor, that you have the ability to have fresher food, local food, you know, food that supports your community, but food that feels safer than yeah. what's out there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, thank you for addressing the sort of affordability aspect, because I think that's one of the things that can keep a lot of people away from the farmers market mm-hmm. is, you know, I don't entirely know where this sort of perception came from, but it seems like maybe in the past 10 or so years, there was this like PR push for the farmers market, right? And mm-hmm. it kind of became this like sort of bougie place to go on the weekends,
mm-hmm.
Maybe have like a little date, you
yeah.
know? And so I feel like there's this perception like it's not really a place to get nutritious, mm-hmm. you know, affordable food.
Right.
But it's more of like a luxury kind of thing
yeah.
that you do for fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for raising that.
Yeah. We're trying to get people to understand that it's both.
Yeah.
you know, for me and my business, I absolutely identify as a luxury brand.
Mm-hmm.
We sell tea blends, but we are selling organic and or wild crafted ingredients in our tea blends.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't meant for somebody who isn't an avid tea drinker or doesn't care what's in their tea.
Right.
And we make that very clear. Like, yes, there is cheaper tea you could get.
Yeah.
We are not that's not our audience. Our audience is definitely people who either really enjoy good tea, because our tea is very good.
It is. Yeah, I've had it. It's really good.
Or people who do care about what is, you know. And for me, I try to explain to people, like, I'm from L.A., there's an inclination towards things like the word organic or, you know, like gluten-free and things like that. And that's why these things occur to me to begin with, right? But I'm not, you know, a zealot about it. And so when I, you know, I'm like, I tell them, I'm very frank about it. I'm like, I like to use organic ingredients so that I know that what I'm eating or drinking is exactly what I think I'm eating or drinking,
mm-hmm.
right? So my big one is like, if I'm eating a cow, I just want to make sure it's an actual cow, you know,
yeah.
and that my orange is an orange. That's how I started to be concerned about organic ingredients. But then I was doing an interview in college once about, I can't even remember, but I ended up talking to a professor for food safety. And he started talking to me about pesticides, and he's like, I won't eat anything without rinsing it in vinegar. And so that also is what kind of went into my mind about, oh, that's another reason why you eat organic,
mm-hmm.
is to avoid the pesticides that are out there,
yeah.
you know, that may not have the name Roundup, but are basically a version of Roundup, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a topic that I definitely want to do an episode on for sure.
Yeah.
I actually, I saw a study saying that, like, if you rinse your conventionally grown, if you soak, actually,
yeah.
your conventionally grown produce in baking soda water for 15 minutes, then it will remove something like 90%. Of the pesticides or whatever that's on it. But it's like, who's using baking soda water? Who's doing it for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And only 90%?
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me.
That is a way of thinking of it, only 90%. What about the other 10?
I'm worried about that too.
Straight to your liver.
Yeah. You know, there's something here though that it's like, so I feel like in the U.S. in particular.
Oh, I'm so sorry though, before we move on, because I only said one aspect.
Oh.
We are a luxury brand. There are, however, very many people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There are many vendors though, you know, where I talking about the kid, the young man who's out there selling his wares. And every time, I feel like when I go up, I feel like that meme from Arrested Development where it's like, it's a banana, Michael. How much could it cost? $10. Right? And I feel like every time I'm going to look at fruit, it's going to be $10. Mm. And so when I see these things where it's like, oh, I can get an apple for the exact cost of what it is at a store, but it's fresher, you know, it's actually hard, like it's supposed to be. And that sort of thing. That's why I'm like, oh, actually the farmer's market is much more attainable than we realize.
I think the other thing about farmer's markets that I love is like, when I go to the farmer's market, it's like, I feel like my eyes are opened by the whole variety of food that's out there, right? I mean, bigger picture, we've been experiencing a decline in biodiversity, right? Like, mm-hmm. let's just acknowledge that. But you know, you see in the grocery store basically the same 20 things, mm-hmm. right? And so at farmers markets, there's a wider variety, and in addition to that, what is there often is bigger. It looks healthier. Like, I went to the farmer's market next to me a few months ago, and I saw a bok choy. It was this big. Yeah. I was like, I didn't even know they grew that big. I went up to the person manning the station, and I was like, I cannot believe this bok choy. But of course, he sees it all the time, so he was like, yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
But like just like the vibrancy mm-hmm. of the food that you see at the farmer's market just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And then when I then go back into the grocery store mm-hmm. and I like check out what's on offer, I'm like,
yeah.
This is
I want nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It introduces you to the concept of seasonality as well.
Yes.
You know, you're like, oh, it's not for sale here because it's not in season.
Yes.
You know, what are you eating if you're getting something that isn't in season but is available to you, right?
Yeah. And the seasonality topic, I mean, the global food industry is actually so complicated that like I need to bring an expert in here to talk mm-hmm. about it, because like I don't understand all of it. But with the seasonality thing, right, it's like, okay, you like strawberries mm-hmm. and you expect to have them all year round. So we're importing strawberries from other countries, right, mm-hmm. where they grow. But like there's such an entitlement to that. There's such a like, I don't care what season it is. I don't care about just the whole grander scheme of like how this world works. Yeah. I want my strawberries in the middle of October, you know?
Yeah.
Like
fresh strawberries.
Right. They
frozen,
damn
fine,
well
okay.
better be fresh and smell good yeah, too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But I've also been really trying to lean into eating more seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was hard for me, right? Because, you know, I'm a busy person, just like so mm-hmm. many of us. And so the way that I would sort of manage my food was I had my like five or six recipes that I knew how to make, mm-hmm. you know, I knew they were yummy. I knew they were nutritious. I'd go to the store, I'd get all the ingredients every single mm-hmm. week to make my,
yeah.
you know, but eventually I just started getting really bored,
yeah,
you know? And, I don't know, about a year ago, I also just had this inclination to start, like, do a psilocybin microdosing protocol mm-hmm. for, I don't know, 2 months or so. And the reason for it, this gets a little personal, but, like, the reason for it was that I was noticing that, like, despite having done all of this internal processing, mm-hmm. my mind was still sort of running around in these, like, sad mm-hmm. cycles. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this isn't because of unprocessed trauma. This is just mm-hmm. like how my brain is wired now, right? Mm-hmm. So I was doing it as a way of introducing some neuroplasticity to sort of help address that. But one of the really interesting things that ended up happening mm-hmm. was that I started cooking in more of like an intuitive way.
Mm.
So rather than going to the store and with my like list, mm-hmm. right, I would just go, and obviously there are some things that you need, right? Mm-hmm. But then I'd be like, oh, well, that looks interesting. I wonder mm-hmm. what that is. Like, this is calling to me. I don't know. I put it in my basket, right? And what I noticed was that when it would come time to prepare a meal, stuff would just kind of come together.
Mm.
Yeah, like I'd have a quarter of an onion that needed to be eaten, and I don't know, I'd make tacos, you know, and I'd have all of the stuff somehow. And, you know, it just kind of kept happening. So I've just been leaning in.
That's wonderful.
That. Yeah, it's great. I waste less food.
Yeah.
I'm less bored, and like also I'm eating more seasonally because I'm just working with what's available.
I'm always so impressed when people can do that.
Yeah.
No, I am, you know, speaking as a knitter, I went to a knitting class and the woman was saying how she's like, yeah, nowhere else do they use patterns. Like Americans are really the only ones who use patterns to knit. And I was like, oh, what a fascinating concept. And then talking to my sister, and she's like, yeah, I was trying to make something without a pattern. But this and that, I was like, and that's why I need patterns. I don't have the time to make mistakes, right? And so I'm just kind of like, yes, I would love to intuit. Nope, I need my patterns, AKA recipes.
Totally.
I need to know because I just, like my relationship with food isn't like anything I put together will taste good. This might be autism, though. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, what I've found is like, so if you have kind of your baseline recipe, right? Mm-hmm. So for instance, like I know how to make, I know all the basic ingredients for like a
spaghetti.
Vegetable soup.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And then it's like, okay, well, normally maybe I put garbanzo beans in here, mm-hmm. but I have some kidney beans or some cannelli beans, you know, or, you know, maybe I generally like to put some kale in this, but I have this spinach instead.
Oh, okay,
kind of thing.
Like an ease with substitution.
Yeah,
okay.
and also just being comfortable and confident enough to do that, right?
Yes.
I mean, same thing with like stir fry. I mean, you know how a stir fry like works,
mm-hmm.
and once you sort of master that general concept, then you can just
technically anything's a stir fry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
I thought you were just like, and next thing I know, I had a scramble, like the perfect scramble. And I'm like, nope, I would fail miserably.
I mean, sometimes that does happen. I made this one thing. I had like an impossible burger patty
mm-hmm.
and then also some like potatoes that I roasted with some broccoli. Mm-hmm. And then I made this like vegan garlic sauce, and it was just kind of all coming together in the moment, and then I sat down and ate it, and I was like, good goddamn, like this is good. We'll make again, all right.
Yes.
Yeah, so
okay,
yeah,
yes, then kudos.
Just in case you haven't seen it yet, I wanted to share this infographic with you. For those of you watching on video, take a screenshot of this and look at it in detail later. If you're just hearing my voice, we'll have a link to it in the show notes for you. This infographic was put together by Oxfam in 2014. So, full disclosure, it's out of date. But it still gets an important point across. Just a small number of megacorporations control the majority of the food brands you see in conventional grocery stores. These corporations are Nestle, PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Unilever, Danone, General Mills, Kellogg's, Mars, Associated British Foods, and Mondelez, formerly known as Kraft. If you start to go a bit cross-eyed as you look at this, you're not alone. The proliferation of the different brands you see creates the illusion of diverse choices. Another way to say this is that it creates consumer confusion. And it hides the fact that behind what appears to be many companies is really just a few megacorporations. And this infographic only covers brands for food intended for human consumption. I recently discovered that the brand of treats I was feeding my cat is owned by Mars, the candy company. No wonder she liked them. and no wonder she got sick. So while you're considering who you're supporting with your grocery dollars, feel free to reference this infographic. There are a ton of brands on here that would be great candidates to cross off your list forever, if you haven't already. Let's opt out and stop feeding these beasts. Now, let's get back into the episode. Something that I find really interesting about sort of how Americans approach food shopping is, you know, for so many of us, the grocery store is the place. And on some level, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about that to me is, like, the grocery store actually didn't exist, like, 100 years ago, you know? And even today, in most other countries, or many other countries, let me put it that way, yes, they have grocery stores, but, like, still the farmer's market remains a very central, critical part of the way that people obtain food. You know, and part of that is sort of what we've been talking about, which is, like, because the produce in the grocery store actually isn't that good. And people know that, right? And so they rely on their weekly market. This was the case in Costa Rica when I went. There were so many different markets to go to. This was the case also. I mean, I lived for a year in Oxford, and, you know, very developed country, right? But, like, good Lord, the produce in the grocery store was terrible. But the farmer's market there was incredible. It was honestly far and away the best I've ever seen. They had a cheesemonger. They had a butcher cart, which, like, I've never seen anywhere else, but was my favorite. And I'm saying this as a person who does not eat meat. The man who ran it, he had this, like, very heavy English accent, and he would just be, like, calling out prices of items, like, from his cart in that kind of, like, that, like, auctioneer sort of voice, you know? And it just added this, like, such a beautiful, I mean, I really appreciate it, this, like, beautiful sort of sound to just the whole scene, you know? And, like, there was, like, bulk foods there, and, like, truly, I could get almost everything that I needed out of a grocery shop at that farmer's market, you know, minus a few, like, pantry staples that they just didn't have. But, like, that was my primary go-to for food. You know, and when I travel, I mean, this is, it's funny traveling with me because, like, I want to know how the people who live there, like, do their, live there, right? So I'm like, I want to see the grocery store. Show me this grocery store. We're going to walk around.
That's so funny. Actually, I'm not very different from you. My sister and I will travel for farmers markets and food co-ops. We found this amazing one in Skagit Valley. So if anyone ever finds their way on the way to Vancouver, stop and visit the Skagit Valley co-op.
Totally. Yeah.
Great.
I've recently started shopping at a co-op here too, and it just feels so much better shopping there. If you haven't looked up your, like, local food co-op, please do.
Well, like you said, there's going to be certain pantry items, and farmers markets are seasonal. They're rarely year-round, and even if they are year-round, they're going to be limited in what they have because food is limited in what is available during the year. So you still need a good grocery store to go to, and a co-op is a fun, fantastic way to go get your food. Some are better than others.
Totally. Yeah.
I want to tell you more great things about the farmer's market, though.
Yeah, tell me more.
Okay. It's a really fun place to find things you can't normally find in a grocery store. You know, like, you can find tea at a grocery store. You can't find really delicious, busy blends in a grocery store,
really,
right?
Really delicious, busy blends? What does that mean?
Because we don't like to do, like, oh, here's your chamomile, straight chamomile. Who wants that? You. But
me always, please.
You know, we were like, no, you're going to get your chamomile spearmint lemongrass sop. You know, all of that in one, right?
Yeah.
But also, I'm trying to think, my big thing, I love the baked goods I find at the farmer's market. Yeah. And when people were talking about eggs and the prices of eggs, I didn't know what they were talking about because I get eggs from the farmer's market. Right. Well, now I get it from a friend, but... so if if anybody says they're raising chickens, make sure to be friendly to them. But yeah, you know, I was like, what are they talking about? What are the, the prices are eggs and I was already, paying more than normal because they are, local, try to feed them non-grain, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I just encourage people to consider all these things about the farmer's market as well.
Yeah. I love getting eggs that were grown by someone or not grown.
The chicken's grown by someone.
The chickens are eggs. Grown. Yeah, but there's something so fun about seeing all the different colors of the shells. Because you forget, if you only get your eggs in the store, you think that they're all this one color, but there's just so much variety. And I don't know.
Yep.
It's kind of a shame that we've uniformized them so much. Yeah.
I like seeing the golden yolks.
Yes.
My sister kind of ruined my life because I used to get Vital Farms. She said they add cayenne to the diet of the chickens to make
yolks. So it's fake? Once you see what a true, rich, well-nourished egg yolk looks like, you realize that all the other eggs you've been eating are...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is not at all what we thought we were...
Yeah, this chicken was suffering.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, can I ask you another question about the Port Orchard Farmers
Please?
Market? So I'm going to give you a little bit of background here. Mm-hmm. So one of the last times I went to a farmers market, it was very spur of the moment. I just happened to be walking by and it was there. And I was since I'm here, I'll just stop and grab some things. And because it was spur of the moment, I didn't have any bags or anything on me. And the only thing that they had, that the vendor had to give me to walk home with my vegetables was this plastic bag. Mm-hmm. And I was so bummed because as all my listeners know, I'm very anti-plastic. And, it's I tried to do a good thing by shopping at a farmer's market, and then I got landed with this, plastic bag that I then had to deal with. And it just seemed like a missed opportunity. So, I guess what I'm trying to get to for you is, does the Port Orchard Farmer's Market have any regulations as far as the kind of packaging and kind of bags that the vendors can use at the farmer's market?
No, I'm not aware. I don't know if any of them do, because even in, definitely not at the Port Orchard Farmer's Market, but I love that you bring that up, because maybe there's a way to encourage the use of paper bags.
Yeah.
You also could have technically gone and bought a tote from the market canopy area.
Yeah.
And I'm blanking on the market. Anyway, sorry, blanking. Pausing here. So the Port Orchard Farmers Market doesn't have any regulations, but I love that concept of, trying to encourage the use of paper bags. We sell market totes, and most farmers markets that I know of sell, canvas totes.
Yeah.
So if you're in a pinch, you can get a bag and help support what is most likely a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. but, even in Seattle, I think they still use plastic bags there.
Yeah.
At the produce level, yeah.
Totally. And I think, I think that one of the things that has happened for us culturally, is that plastic has just become so mundane in our lives that we just we're of course it's plastic, right? What else would it be, right? and because, plastic versions of things tend to be cheaper per, right? It makes sense that you would pick the plastic option. But I don't know. I guess I'm... Can I put you on the spot and ask, is this something that you're willing to raise to the board?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the frustrating part of being with boards is when you're one voice, but even one voice can hopefully turn into two and three.
Yeah.
And even if it's just a matter of, you become the voice that has to then do the research to figure out how to make it possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get vendors to use paper bags instead of plastic. Do you use nylon?
Do I, are you asking, like, would nylon be okay?
No, I'm asking for you because they make these little bags now that are just, like, this big.
Yeah.
So that you can never, so you can always have a bag with you at all times.
Yeah. No, the truth is that my, like, grocery store bag is, like, made out of plastic. It's basically that, like, tarp kind of material.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my mind, it's like, I use it once. I had my last one for like 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
of course.
Yeah. But like these plastic bags, they just proliferate, you know. It drives me crazy because I see people, they'll put like two items in it.
Yeah.
And it's like time for the next one.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing?
I went to the grocery store and I don't put my meats in the bags, you know. I'm just like, eh, whatever, I'll make it home. Mm-hmm. And sometimes though, they'll put it in for me while the checkout's happening. Yeah. And I'm like, there's a reason why I didn't.
Yeah.
I did not need that extra bag.
Totally.
So yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you will say, you will ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, like I said, there's really no ask. It's more so, how do we make it? How can it be possible? Right.
Yeah.
I know no one's going to be like, no, we need to keep plastic.
They're team plastic over here.
Yeah. They're just going to be like, okay, how do we make it happen?
Yeah.
So that's really what it comes to.
Yeah.
Ideally trying to find a farmer's market that does use paper.
Yeah.
Cause I'm big on not trying to invent the wheel. Mm-hmm. Just, you know,
yeah.
Copy and give credit.
Right. Yeah. 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 Well, would you pinky promise me that you'll look into this?
Yes.
Yeah. Right here, right now.
Yeah.
Backroom deals on behalf of New Earth friends. You saw it right here.
And then when you have to travel, well, no, don't travel all the way to Port Orchard just to do your shopping because then you're spending the gas on it. But
yeah,
if you ever find your way through,
totally,
you can check.
Or if you are connected with a farmer's market in your area, talk with your leadership there. Yeah. And will you please let me know what ends up happening? I'd love
absolutely.
To update people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that you got started with the farmer's market because you're a vendor, right? You know, and I love that. I've really enjoyed sort of watching your progress as a small business owner. And, you know, I think one of the things that we really need right now is to, like, de-pedestalize the corporations and the business leaders, right? Like, there's something in our culture where it's like, how do I put this? It's like running a business, making things happen in the world, like whatever, like that's for those people over there.
Yeah.
That's for people with capital. That's
right.
For people who somehow, you know, sort of have attained this like mythological sort of status in our minds, right? And, you know, what we see over and over again, including in the food industry, is that when we have this mentality and when we allow sort of those mega corporations and you know, the ultra wealthy to be in control of these things, well, they end up having too much power, too much influence, too much control, right? And so it seems to me like what we need is actually to step in ourselves to running businesses, right? Rather than having just a few corporations that are controlling everything, it needs to be this like wider network of smaller companies that are doing this.
Sure.
Companies that are run by real people like you, right? And, you know, it's nice to say that, but you know, the reality is that a lot of people are still very much in this headspace of, I'm an employee, that employee headspace, right? That I'm waiting for someone else to tell me what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I show up, I do my tasks, I collect my paycheck, right? And instead to sort of shift into that business owner mentality, right? No one's telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have the vision. I'm responsible. You know, mm-hmm. my efforts go towards whether I get paid or not, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I understand that you've kind of gone through this. Mm-hmm. And would you maybe share some about your journey?
Sure. Everyone always asks, like, oh, why did you start your business? And I very, very bluntly tell them, oh, for the tax write-off. I don't have children. And so it's a wealth retention strategy because I am also an employee.
Yeah.
And very many of us are employees. As I mentioned about, you know, the flower farmer, she has a full-time job. It is very hard to make enough money to live off of as a small business owner. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we're doing it because of some sort of passion. And for me, it was providing something that, you know, because I was like, okay, I want to do this for the tax write-off. I'm serious about that. But, you know, I was like, I knew I couldn't do it unless it was something that I was passionate about mm-hmm. sharing with others. So it originally started as a build your own bath soak.
Okay.
And a business that was about meditation was going to be the focus. Mm. And the reason why I chose that was because I feel like I have this ability of sharing energy to help people achieve what they want to achieve.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to fertility. Yeah. So not to get too far off track, but I feel that I am represented by the Empress okay. in the tarot.
Yes.
And she is about growing desire and fertility and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't crazy for me, but I've had a few people who were, you know, doing IVF and I was like, oh, here, take these stones. Mm. And then they finally had a successful round of IVF.
Wow.
So I was just like, I'm a strong believer in the energy of stones. And, you know, it's not to say just like, oh, this rock does it for you. But, you know, as with everything, intention, and you know, all that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how we started. And then my sister decided she also wanted to do cleansing smudge sprays, where it's vinegar that was infused with white sage, so that whether you were wanting to actually clean your space right. using a natural cleaner of vinegar, because we kept buying, she just recently moved up to Washington with me, we kept buying things off of Facebook Marketplace, and the vibes would be off. So needing to cleanse these items as well. So
that's real.
Yeah. So basically we were just providing things that to people that work for us and we feel strongly about. And the bath soaks were, we make sure to use packaging that could either be reused or recycled or composted. So we were putting them in, and we still do put them in like these ice cream, paper ice cream, the pints, you know?
Oh, yeah, those. Neat.
Although we learned on our first time, it's like, oh, we keep telling people about dry skin through our baths. I make a good salve. Let me make that for people as well, right? And so, you know, that's kind of how it kept building. And then when it came to tea, it was just really funny because I love tastings, whether it's olive oil, wine, beer, or tea. Coffee, whiskey, anything. I just love tastings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I have that sort of appreciation for tea. Somebody, and people would come up to us like, oh, we thought you sold tea. And finally I was like, I mean, I guess we could. And I just looked into it and researched and yeah, decided to sell tea.
Mm-hmm. And that's become one of your big major sellers, actually.
By sales volume, we are a tea shop. Mm-hmm. So, and it's funny because, you know, my sister bought it. She's like, I don't want to be a tea shop. And I was like, well, I don't know what to tell you because we're a tea shop at this point. But we, you know, we call ourselves, we're just more of, we're a clean living store, you know, it's because we still have our cleanses. We still have the vinegar sprays. We have smokeless smudge sprays. We have room linen sprays, but we don't use the same kind of perfume oils that most people use. People will ask us and we're like, oh, if you're looking for a Febreze, that's not what we're doing. You know, we still have the bath soaks, but they're very minimal ingredients. So especially if you have any suffering from eczema, you know, the water's really hard where we are. So it's just, you know, a few ingredients, all very natural, but it works. You know, cleansing, my sister had a baby and we'd clean the baby and these sort of things. So, you know, we definitely back what we sell. And really just, it's been very difficult. My Saturdays are completely obliterated by this in summer, you know, and if anything, we all know in the Pacific Northwest, it is only sunny when you have something else to do, right?
Yeah.
And so every time I'd be like, oh, it's sunny, what a great day. And then the minute it's, you know, the market's done, clouds out. So, you know, definitely a sacrifice of time, definitely a sacrifice of energy. But when you come back, or, you know, you go to market and somebody's like, oh, there you guys are. Oh, I was looking right. I need more of this tea.
Oh, I love that.
That's what helps motivate, you know?
Yeah.
Also just the community we built, we're brand new to the area. And one time my sister needed a babysitter and she called somebody that she met through the market. And the friend I get my eggs from met through the market.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk more about the community that you've found and built through the farmers market, but let's talk more about just sort of that journey that you've had as a small business owner, you know. I mean, it's not easy because you're birthing something, like, very truly, you know. I mean, it's like you have to have the whole vision of a thing and then not just have the vision, but then bring it into this world. You know, I mean, that is birthing, right? And you know, on top of that, then there's sort of, I don't know, self-doubt comes in, you know?
So I am very fortunate. My experience is very fortunate because I have the full-time job. So there's funds coming in no matter what. And that, I think that makes a huge difference. To provide a parallel example, I had a second job as a server. As a bartender, or I should say, as and you know, I'd be like, oh, I'm tired, I want to close the bar. And some people would be like, with this and that, I was like, no, I'm gonna close it. And they're like, well, you're not gonna get your tip. And I'm like, I don't need it. Thank you though. And so I I know that I'm coming from a different place to somebody almost like my sister, who actually does depend on what we make in order to, you know, eat and stuff like that. So really, like, my struggle is more so finding the energy to keep doing it and finding that desire, right? And so when people say, like, oh, I'm afraid to start a business, I validate that. And, like, you have every reason to be afraid because there is a very real sacrifice and more than likely a monetary sacrifice that you have to make in order to start this business, right? So you have to want to do it. You know, I know people who are like, oh, I just want to own a business to own a business. And I'm like, that's going to be difficult. I'm not saying it's the wrong way to go about it, but it's really difficult to get out of bed and motivate for something you're only doing because you think it's what you want to do. So, yeah, that's that's where I come from, is a place of extreme privilege, so that when I do make mistakes, it's, you know, our entire first year was what we called our, you know, R&D, research and development, right? To figure out what products were, what we wanted to sell, what to sell, when to sell it, how to sell it, right? And I'm still a very bad business person. I'm so bad. Like, somebody messaged me and was like, we need smudge spray. We have ghosts in the house. And they're like, we're not too worried. It seems like a friendly ghost. And I was like, oh, okay. It might be a fairy, so just leave 2 pennies out and see if it stops. This might just be, you know, they might just be having fun. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll try that, you know, and we'll get back to you if we need the smudge spray. But I was like, wow, I guess I should just let people buy my products, but that's not That's just not how I work, you know? Yeah. Like, this is a genuine problem. Let's solve it together. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, also that. And I'm so happy to give things away for free because, again, I don't look at it as like this money that I need other than the money that the business needs, yeah, right, to continue. But otherwise, yeah, I'm just like, it's more so this, oh, here's this thing that is a part of something bigger, i.e. the farmer's market. It's a part of something bigger, i.e., you know, our Port Orchard community, a part of something bigger, Kitsap County, the United States of America, filled with people like me who are just trying to bring stuff to each other, yes, in a clean way, in a ethical way, in a, you know, an engaging way, just all these different ways that we don't get from the bigger place, you know?
Yes.
So I say that, that it's okay to be afraid, but there's absolutely ways to do it with as minimal sacrifice as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what you're sharing about just the you wanting to just basically help.
Yeah.
You know, something that I noticed when I really started focusing on, like, how do I shop local, right? Mm-hmm. Is I would go into, for instance, like the local hardware store, mm-hmm, and I'd get like 3 or 4 people be like, do you need help? And when this first started happening, I'd be like, I was overwhelmed. I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I will find what I need, you mm-hmm know? And I realized after a little while, I was like, I'm just used to being completely ignored, mm-hmm, in the store. Mm-hmm. These people, they're literally paid to help me find things and make, yes, my shopping experience easier. Mm-hmm. And like, I only find it overwhelming because I'm not used to it, you know? And so now that I've like adjusted, mm-hmm, I love talking with these people. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, they'll tell me all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
They'll answer all these questions. Like, they'll, mm-hmm, hypothesize, like, speculate, yeah, with me about like various solutions,
yeah,
like like your penny situation, yeah, right? And like, now instead of feeling overwhelmed, I'm like, this is humans taking care of humans.
Yeah.
And it's exactly beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Like,
buy my stuff if you need it or want it, but I'm happy to help you, whatever. Again, I identify as a poor person. So it's like, mm-hmm, well, you probably need that money to eat, especially since bananas are $10. Right. Yeah, it's, let's, you know, figure out how to solve it for cheap. And for me personally, I will always shop at a place that isn't trying to take my money just to take my money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do, that's my goal, but I'm not a very good business person on account of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's again, it's like figuring out how to be a business owner while still having that human element, mm-hmm, you know? And I think we're all figuring that out.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot of good role models. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, because we were removed from those small businesses, right?
Yeah.
They've always been out there. Those most small business owners to begin with, but we just weren't really engaged with them because they were pushed out.
They were pushed out. And not only were they pushed out from our locations, mm-hmm, like our neighborhoods, but also from our minds.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is the power of advertising. This is the power of the advertising dollar.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, again, to take the hardware store example, mm-hmm, what do you think of when you say hardware store? Home Depot or Lowe's, mm-hmm, right? But there's like,
yeah,
10 different hardware stores within a five mile radius of, yeah, where I live, you, mm-hmm, know? And it's just a matter of saying, okay, I'm not going to go, mm-hmm, to the first thing that comes into my mind because I know that that only happens because of advertising dollars.
Yeah.
You know, where can I find the place that actually will support my local community,
yeah,
and the people who were my neighbors?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you go to a farmer's market, it's, you know, on any given week, up, you know, 52 small business owners,
yeah,
that you can support.
Yeah.
And it's okay. We know you're not going to get to all of us, but anything, any, if I sell one tea, I'm always excited. Like, oh, somebody likes our stuff.
Yay. It brings joy to your heart.
It, yeah, really does. Yeah. Mm. And plus, I get to love to give the samples because I like a tasting. So I'm like, you want samples? Okay, let's walk through this. It's always exciting.
Yeah. So tell me more. I mean, you sort of mentioned community earlier, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. For folks who haven't been to a farmer's market recently, mm-hmm. or I don't know, just tell me about how community has sort of come into your life as a result of the farmer's market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, you know, we met one woman and it was like, we need a babysitter. We know nobody else in this town. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, give her a call. But there's also my sister and I, with the same person, started doing a new moon sound circle. I just feel like the full moon gets a lot of attention.
Yeah.
There's other phases. Especially because I feel like I'm always trying to grow something, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, yeah, and usually from inception. So I'm like, I need this new moon. Let's build something together.
Yeah.
So, you know, we started doing that, and then I just invited friends. So more and more friends get to come as a result. I did a guided meditation and someone from the farmer's market joined and, so there's things like that. Very good friend in the knitting world that I met through the farmer's market because she was another vendor.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's now our egg dealer, which is huge.
Gotta have that egg source.
But I think the most important thing is that, so, you know, having only lived there we're currently there for 2 years. My sister ran for city council and won.
Yeah, I was so excited to see that for her. I love that.
And that is only, it was, all, I mean, well, I should say there was two reasons. One, because of her presence at the farmer's market, people actually knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, like a great grassroots campaign and going door to door and giving people letters to say exactly what her ideals and values are. So.
Yes.
But the farmer's market was a huge help because people would get that letter and actually come down to the farmer's market to come speak to her about her campaign.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Love that.
So, you know, at the very least, you could run for office.
Yeah. Well, you know, the farmer's markets are so fun, right? Because there's all these people, there's children.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes they have food carts anymore coffee carts and music, you know, and I don't remember the last time. I mean, I'm a DJ, right? Yeah. I used to go out to live music all the time, but I'm like, I don't remember the last time it was.
Right.
You know, so there's sort of that aspect, right, of just the event, right? But then I feel like something that's missing from so many people's lives these days is actually community, right? And even I think the question of how do I go about building community can be really obscure to people. And one of the ways, and I think you're sort of, you know, what you're saying is kind of pointing to this, is one of the ways you build community is by going to the same place with the same people over and over and over
it's
again.
True.
And creating that facial recognition and just that level of I have shared space with you and I kind of have a sense of what your presence is about. You know, I recognize your face, you know, and eventually you start talking to people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And then you might meet, because I met a woman who teaches Pilates.
Mm.
And I said, I've been wanting to try the class, but I just felt intimidated by going to this new group class. And so I was willing to go because I met the person who was going to teach the class, right? Not for me. It was heated.
Mm.
Can't do that, but... I did it. I tried many, many times. And, then I got an email where she's like, I'm going to keep it hot. And I was like, well, nope, that'll kill me. But point is.
You tried it.
Yeah. My sister tried CrossFit because the people who teach the CrossFit classes came to our stand. And it was actually unrelated. Actually, they didn't stop at our booth, but I saw them nearby. And I was like, hey, you guys were doing the backpacks for children thing. And they're like, yeah. So we talked about fundraising and various community service events and things like that. we meet the people, the Jehovah's Witness out there with, you know, who always have their stand and they want to speak to you about their religion. And they come to our booth because we have natural remedies, which they're a big fan of.
Okay.
You know, so engaging with them but, you know, being able to be honest, like, oh, we're not going to be coming Jehovah's Witness anytime soon, but thank you, you know, respect that.
It's cool though to find that commonality, that common ground, even with folks where there's kind of like a hard no on something, but there's still something that you guys can agree on. That's
exactly.
Beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's just so many, you know, and I love it.
So where can people find you if they want to learn more about your company, Sierra Serenity?
Yeah, I mean, so we are on Instagram at the Sierra Serenity. If anyone's wondering, we're named after the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Yes. Yeah, that's what I came up with this idea. I was living there. So we have Instagram. We have a website. It's, you know, www.sierraserenity.com. But they can also find us at the Port Orchard and Paulsbow Farmers Markets up in Kitsap County in Washington.
Yeah, and that's Saturdays?
Those are on Saturdays, yeah. Okay. We alternate between the two.
Beautiful.
A lot of people just reach out via Instagram or email when they want something or need something. But I am always happy to talk shop when it comes to tea blends, when it comes to vinegar, when it comes to needing to smudge your space and whether or not you think it's a fairy. So please reach out if you have any sort of interest.
Perfect. Well, we'll have all those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the New Humans for New Earth podcast. If you found this episode to be inspirational, helpful, or informative, please share it with your friends, your partner, a family member, or anyone that you love. If you loved this episode, please leave us a review. And be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. This is how we grow the New Humans community and help inspire others to join us in helping to co-create New Earth. This world is what we make it. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you in the next episode.